The shaping of your point of view is your number one job.
Welcome to the Technical Difficulties Podcast. I'm Liz Gerber, and a design professor at Northwestern.
And I'm Lauren Lin, and I'm a student who has also worked in the design industry. Each week, we speak with women leaders in design and technology.
Today, we're so excited to welcome Shani Sandy. Shani Sandy is a design executive at IBM, serving as Vice President of Experience Design. She's an award-winning creative leader working at the intersection of design, technology, and leadership. Designing forward is her philosophy, which we can't wait to hear more about. So, Shani, that's your front-facing bio. How would you introduce yourself? What's the behind-the-scenes bio? Did I miss anything?
I would say that I'm always evolving. I say to people when I introduce myself, yes, I'm a designer. Yes, I'm an executive. Yes, I am a practitioner. But I'm also fill in the blank. I'm still evolving. I'm still becoming.
Well, that's beautiful. Thank you. We can't wait to hear more of those stories, Shani. Thank you. And thank you for being with us today.
Absolutely. Thank you all for having me.
So we like to start by asking everyone, how did you get your start in technology and design? Another way of thinking about this is, was there a moment when you had, I'm a designer, or I'm a technologist? Or was it only in retrospect that you had this? How would you think about that identity?
Yeah. I mean, I think I've never not been a designer. And I think I was born a designer. And if anything, I would take it back a notch and say I was born an artist. I think for me, the way that I've processed the world has always been through my sensitivity. And I had to figure out how to make that work for me in the business world, because sometimes that sensitivity can be a deterrent in a world where it's not emotional. It's very much driven by business needs, and emotions have to be put to the side. But if I think about that question more, I think I've always been a designer. I've always been an artist. And maybe the addition is when I got to the point of adopting the label of designer is maybe the distinction, right? Because I was always kind of making things and, you know, looking at scraps of materials and putting that together to make a new outfit or my jean jacket design or doing notebook designs for classmates. And I was always making things. I had my poor siblings, like I would put them in like into classrooms in our, I mean, not true classrooms, like in our bedroom, like create like a classroom and be the teacher and have us draw together. Like I was always the one like, let's make something. And that was just part of how we grew up. So it's just part of how I know myself to be. But adopting the label of designer, I think that came with more formal education. And then people starting to say, oh, you have this type of skill set. Then you could probably apply that to being a graphic designer or being a web designer. But that came after. I think I was always just a maker.
Yeah. Can you... I found it fascinating to your statement about using sensitivity to your advantage in a environment that doesn't necessarily prioritize that. Can you give a concrete example of how you do that? It sounds like a secret. It's a powerful skill. If you can reveal your secrets.
Yeah, if I can reveal my secrets. Yeah, I think for sure. I mean, I think that it's on a daily basis, right? So there's some more indirect ways that translates that I think may not seem as potent if I tell stories about it, but I'll do my best. So, you know, a lot of the work that you do, particularly when you're in a business setting, particularly when you're in a company that is highly matrix, so meaning that you work with a lot of different types of collaborators, you work with people in and outside of the organization, and you have different responsibilities and allegiances based on where you're set up in an organization, it requires that you work really well together to get to an outcome. You have to be collaborative in order to get stuff done. No one is doing the high impact critical work on their own. It's always team-based. And so what I started to realize inside of corporations in particular is there is an emotional intelligence that I was able to wield because I picked up on a lot of cues that weren't just the audible verbal cues, but the way that tonalities would be conveyed or the way that someone might make eye contact or the distance between someone or just energies. Like I pick that stuff up very quickly. And sometimes I could pick that up and it can make me feel like, ooh, this person is not as receptive to me as I would hope they are. And I could think, oh, wow, this is going to be a challenge. And that could be a deterrent. That could make me be a bit apprehensive of how am I going to create a relationship with this particular professional, colleague, or what have you, to end up getting to our, like the outcomes that I know we have to get to together. And I feel like they are not really on the same page. They're kind of not receptive to me. And so for me, typically when I pick that up, it's typically true. and so I'm already doing the work of figuring out how do I start to build rapport? And it can be sometimes as simple as just sharing a bit about who I am and being more conversational and less transactional with the way I engage with my colleagues. Sometimes it can just be after a conversation or a meeting with a few folks, coming back afterwards and saying, hey, I'd love to have a little bit of time with you one-on-one, just to make sure like we're connected on some of the things that you talked about, or just kind of affirming something that I heard on the sidelines to build that rapport. And so when I pick up on those types of things where I feel like there may be a bit of a disconnect, I do my own work to then help bring the person who I feel is a disconnect with into a place of better rapport. Because I know that's what it's going to take to get to some form of relationship where we can actually work together and achieve outcomes. So it's interesting, right? Because I think people think, okay, the work is the work. It has to get done and make sure that, you know, box A, B, and C are all checked. It's also how you do it. It's not just what you do. And so I think that how piece is where my sensitivity has worked to my advantage.
That's a great example of like what it's like to build leadership skills. And that's something that I feel like they don't teach you in school. Mm-hmm. That's something that you learn on the job in the workforce when you're working with diverse mm-hmm. stakeholders. I do want to pivot back to like your education and the moment in the beginning when you said that design was like a label that became more formalized to you through like more formal education rather mm-hmm. than like learning on the job maybe. So you got your BA in art history and painting and computer art at Tufts University and the School of the Museum of Fine Arts. So I'm wondering how this educational path maybe solidified some of those design labels for you and maybe what you realized, I did not learn this in school and this is what I learned on the job and it's just as important.
Yeah, for sure, Lauren. It's a dynamic journey for me when I think about my educational path. So a little bit of refining on that journey story. I ended up doing dual degrees because when I started my formal collegiate education, I realized by the end of my freshman year that the type of education that I wanted in terms of hands-on creativity and artistry, I was not receiving where I was. And it was a tough decision because I had busted my butt to get into Columbia. That's where I was. It was at Columbia University in New York City. And I was excited to be back in New York City and be at Columbia. They have an amazing art history program, and I wanted to still pursue art history, but I also wanted to pursue studio art with more rigor than I was getting in Columbia. So I made the decision in my sophomore year to transfer and go to Tufts University and the School of the Museum of Fine Arts, because I was able to continue my BFA and do the art history piece that I wanted to do, but also add to that studio art and then do my BA. I think I got it turned around. My BA in art history and my BFA in studio art. Nevertheless, so I already was fairly deliberate in realizing it was time for me to pivot so that I could have that hands-on education that was also complemented by more of the theoretical, scholarly endeavors of art history. So there was that as my backdrop. And once I moved into this dual degree program, there was a requirement of taking a computer science course. So that was part of the core curriculum. And it was like computer science 101. I'm talking the basics. And when I was in this course, at first I was like, I cannot believe I have to take a computer science course. But okay, here we go. Let's get this over with. And one of the requirements was to build a website. And that was the gateway into understanding that, oh, there's this artistry that I've been doing as a painter. And there's this art history, the study of painting and other types of art forms. But there's also this space for like using my art in digital mediums. And that was the opportunity for me to create my first website, shanysandy.com, 1999. It was the first opportunity for me to create my own website where I actually featured my artwork and featured my writing, because I used to do poetry and all of that. And in doing that, I started to realize, oh, they're kind of formal disciplines that go beyond studio art and art history. And they're called things like, at that time, it was called computer art. A few years later, it started to kind of transform and become more like web design and eventually expanded into things like user experience, HCI, and so on and so forth. But that's when I started to understand, oh, there are these different types of paths that I can take under this larger umbrella called design. And that really was the gateway for me that got me into more digital-oriented design practice.
I love shanysandy.com. And that was available in 1999.
Yeah, 1999. Well, listen, yeah.
I got LizGerber.com in 1999. I relate to that story.
Yeah, for sure. I appreciate that question. Yes, for sure.
Timing matters.
I hope I answered, because I think there were like two questions there too, Lauren. So did I answer both?
I think you did. Yeah,
I did.
That was a great answer.
It was a great answer.
But that was the entry point. That was the gateway. And to this day, I'm like a bit of a .com hoarder. Like, I probably have like 30 different .coms that I just continually renew, because it's just that was the bug that got me, and it never shook. Are you that too, Liz? It's ridiculous. I don't even wonder how much money I spend like monthly just on maintaining these .coms. I just have these domain names just out there, you know, just in the world. Anyway. Yeah.
Oh, we could do a whole episode just on that. How the early 2000s messed with our brains. And how, remember how companies had to have the word .com in them to be.
Oh my gosh. Are you
tech company?
Yeah, exactly.
That was one of my early contributions at my job. I told a bunch of my older colleagues that they weren't a .com unless they had .com in their name. Anyway, you know, I was really into branding.
I do.
What was going on there.
I do, please. I get it. Yeah.
So obviously we could talk forever. Okay. So you are now an executive at IBM, which is to many of us, like, what an incredible position. It looks like everything has gone perfectly in your career. And yet, I must ask, were there ever moments of like any defining career failures or moments where you went the wrong direction and you had to correct that you are willing to share with us? Any career-defining moments?
Oh my goodness.
You're not perfect, are you sure?
Not perfect at all. No way.
Okay.
Far from it. Like I said in the beginning, I'm still evolving. There's a fill in the blank that I'm continuously rewriting. And even in the last 5 years that I've been at IBM, I'm in my third role in 5 years. And that even, I think, speaks volumes to what it means to continually design your career. And I tell all of my friends, my mentees, protégés, what have you, that I'm still learning too. And for me, just as much as I'm a design practitioner and that's my core, I also use that in my life. And that means in my career, I'm also thinking about how am I continually using my design chops to evolve my career path. So I've had a bunch of failures, and those are necessary, right? There's no way that I could have been at this point in my career without those. I think when I reflect on defining moments, there are several that stand out to me. One defining moment, probably mid-career for me, I was a creative director at a company called Capital IQ. And Capital IQ, the story there just quickly is interesting because it was my first formal gig, so to speak. So before I got into Capital IQ, had my own studio. I was a one-woman shop doing all types of work, working for like the mom and pop cleaners and doing their brand identity. And then even had like clients in at that time, La Jolla, doing their funding website and their brand identity and just taking in work and getting experience as an emerging designer. And so I spent almost 4 years doing that on my own. And that was both by design, but it was also because of the environment. It was right after 9/11. It was very challenging to find work. And I had tens and thousands to pay back in studio loans, in financial loans. And so it was imperative that I figured out how to make it work. I had to make it work. So when I eventually found a full-time gig, which I needed stability of income at that time. It was in a financial company, a financial technology company. And I had really taken a liking to being the first designer. But I quickly also understood that as the first designer, I could only do so much. And so I got to this point in my career where I'm like, okay, I am learning, I'm growing, I'm getting my hands into all types of things from marketing to platform design, UX, and all these types of things, but I need help. I can't continue to be that was one woman shop inside of this company to do so. And that became a reflection moment for me to realize that there was more that needed to happen in order for me to make greater impact. And so I went to my boss at the time, and I was in marketing at the time, and I basically pitched a role and explained that this is where I am, this is what I'm doing. I can do so much more, but in order for me to do so much more, I need a team to do that. And the pitch went over well enough that I was able to get the ability to hire a few interns, and gradually that grew. So I first brought on two interns then evolved to freelancers then evolved to full-time staff. And like within maybe the span of about 4 years or so, I had a small team as a creative director in that business. But that wouldn't have happened if I didn't take the initiative to say, I see opportunity for my growth, and I also see how this growth opportunity for me can help build out this actual company and the experiences that we want to create as part of, you know, this growing startup. So that's probably one of the defining moments I had where I realized I have to also design my career and take control of that and be the one to be my biggest advocate and say, this is what I need. But also like, here's why you want to also invest in me. Like I'm the product. Right. So that's one. I have plenty more, plenty more. But that would be one. But I'm happy to share another one. But it depends on time and what we want to do.
It's up to you. But if you are excited to share another story, I think that would be really fun to listen to. I mean, your first story alone, I think that's a great moment of reflection for me too, to like recognize, like as a student or like emerging talent, what are some moments where you feel like you're hitting that ceiling, or your growth is sort of like hitting a limit and you need to go and advocate for yourself. So if you want to share another,
I'm Laura, and what you're saying too about this plateau, it will continue to happen. If you're truly growing and learning in your life, it will continue to happen. So I've had several, I mean, more than this handful, more than five moments of, okay, it's time for something else. I'm feeling like I'm getting to a plateau. It's time to expand. I think we're here on this earth to expand and to grow. And so, you know, one other, I mean, this is less of a moment and probably more of a realization, particularly as someone whose core, like I shared with you all before, is about making and creating things and, like, you know, sensing the world and feeling that out and then processing it through how I sense the world. As I started to become more entrenched in corporations, you have to be more attuned to what corporations need from you. And I had to get more savvy about business because that was what I was in. I was inside of a business construct. And so I started to kind of refactor myself and realize, okay, yes, I'm still a practitioner. No one's going to take that away from me. But I also now am a business leader. And so as a business leader, how do I take what I do as a designer to impact business? And that was kind of the new way I had to look at things. But then what that meant for me was, oh, shoot, I don't understand business that much. Maybe I need to learn more about business. And so that was like a reckoning. Like, should I go and do an MBA? Should I talk to people who are, you know, in the C-suite? Like, what should I do to get these business chops? And I did do formal education. I don't necessarily think that everyone has to do that. You have to decide what you think is best for you. But I did end up saying, I want to have more formal learning in the areas of business management, change management, understanding the basics of balance sheets and how companies are profitable. And so I did go ahead and actually eventually pursued an MBA. But prior to that, I did a lot of smaller learning programs around businesses and how they function to understand how I translate inside of a business context, right? So the kind of takeaway point for me is this. As a practitioner, I was very much, especially early in my career, I was very much heads down getting the work done. Getting the work done on time, on schedule, on quality. That was my goal all the time. And then I started to look around. I'm like, wait a second, some of these folks who came in around the time that I did or are doing half the amount of work that I do, or there's some questionable things going on here, and they're moving on up. They're moving on up through the, you know, through the ranks of promotions. And what I started to realize is I couldn't just look down at my work. I had to look up and around and understand what it looks like for me to progress in my career. And that's not just doing the traditional output of work. The work is more than the output. The work is building relationships. The work is working on yourself. The work is understanding the context you're in. For me, that was business. So the work for us, especially if you're inside of these type of corporations, goes beyond the day-to-day output. That's important. That's table stakes. But it's more expansive than that. And that was probably the biggest learning for me.
Wow, that's a great story. And I think it's so clear. You live and breathe your philosophy, designing forward. Like, you're always evolving. I just find it really inspiring that you've developed this point of view and you've used it to frame, like, your whole life and growth. I'm curious, what are you excited to work on today? It could be at work or outside of work. And how is that an extension of you designing forward?
Yes, yes. I'm excited about so much right now. For me, designing forward is exactly what it sounds like. It's being very intentional about what's next, but also leaving room for the possibilities as well. And I think that's kind of what I always loved about design, is that there's intention involved for sure. I remember I took this course with Milton Glaser, I don't know now, like maybe 12 years ago now. And I have so many gems and nuggets from that. But one of the things he talks about when it comes to design is this idea of it being an act. It's an act of moving from an existing condition to a preferred condition. And so for me, when I think about designing for, that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm in a current state and I'm looking to move into a future state. And I'm doing that using this larger understanding of design, right? Moving from one state to a preferred state. So for me, there's two things on my mind right now, personally and professionally. So personally, having moved back to Brooklyn, that I'm so excited about that. We've been back in Brooklyn now about 6 months. And we have a space that is entirely raw, a raw loft space. And it's going to be a labor of love. I'm going to say that now. But we're going to be designing this space from top to bottom. There is nothing in it other than boxes and boxes and more boxes. So we're doing a true renovation. And some of our goals in this renovation is to really design a space that speaks to our creativity, but that also brings in craft people that typically don't get the experience and exposure that they should. And so we want to take time to highlight those people. So we're going to document that experience in building a home for us, but also using our community and amazing craft people to help us do it. So that's one of the big things we have going on that I'm very, very excited about. And the second thing is, also around 6 months ago, I moved to a new role. So it's like, you know, I'm telling you, when it rains, it pours, right? So I also moved into a new role about 6 months ago, still inside of IBM. And so it's an exciting time to create a lot of foundational work in building a team. I have a team already, but it's a fairly small team. And we need to build a team that has more capability to drive a lot of change in how we engage with our clients and how we provide optimal experiences in some of the services that we put out into the world. And we just need more capacity to do that. We need more of a team to do that. We need to mature the team. And I love being able to grow teams. That's one of the things that, to me, that's also an act of design. And so top of mind for me is growing that muscle, that capability inside of our business through creating a team, but also helping designers and our peers think about what it means to design for people and making sure that those people are at the center of how we're thinking about the products and the services we put out to the world. And yes, we have to care about that matching our business requirements. That's always going to be a factor. How are we also doing that with the humans in mind that we're creating these products and services for? So those are the two things. There are always other things, but those are probably the two things that are most exciting for me at the moment.
Shani, I feel like we could talk to you forever. You're a fountain of wisdom. We will end to respect your time. Oh, no, I have pages of notes. Is there anything we haven't asked you yet? Any advice, points of view that you feel like you really want to make sure is broadcasted to the world? Open stage at this point for you to say anything that you didn't have to say.
I think one thing I would add, you know, Liz and Lauren, I think that oftentimes, especially emerging designers will ask me, you know, what should I do? What courses should I take? What books should I read? What school should I go to? And I'm very reluctant in being prescriptive. I do, however, like to share that the shaping of your point of view is your number one job. You are, like I said before, a little bit jokingly, but you in many ways are a product. And so, you know, you have to have a unique point of view. And you already do, just being you. But it often means that we have to shape that and be very clear about what our point of view is. People bring you into a space, people bring you into a job, people bring you into an initiative because you offer a special point of view. So get clear on what your point of view is and own that point of view. And if you don't know what it is, go out into the world and experience it. Make the experiences unfiltered, make the experiences varied, but go out into the world and experience those opportunities. And I think that would always be my guidance to not just emerging designers, to all of us. I still do that to this day, and I can do better. I can do better at that. But I think that is the beauty of just being able to have a mindset of growth, that we're here to have the experiences and we're here uniquely us. And so like continue to kind of shape that unique aspect of yourself. And you're the one to define it and be able to own it. And that I think is where I would always place the emphasis with anyone who's just trying to navigate this thing called life.
What is your point of view?
So that would be my tidbit.
What is your point of view?
What is my point of view? My point of view. I mean, it really goes back to that designing forward philosophy that like I know in my core that because I understand the world through designers' eyes and hands, just sensitivity, that I get this real fullness out of life. And when I'm there, when I'm really, really there, because I'm not always present, but when I'm really, really there, I'm my fullest self and I do my best work and it propels me forward when I'm really there. So for me, design has been that thing that's kind of saved me and been the thing to propel me in my career and in my life. And that's for me what my point of view is, that I found my thing. For me, it's design. For me, it's even largely speaking art, really. And that's my claim. That's my core. I'll always go back to that in my compass, trying to figure out how I navigate this world. So that's my product. That's my unique point of view, you know, that like it's one of those things that I think I feel very fortunate to have found fairly early in my life, but it reshapes itself all the time. Like, you know, I'm always having conversations about, what does it mean to be a designer? I don't know. Maybe I'm over this thing called design. Like I'm more, you know, the word in itself is not the thing. It's the act, I guess, is the point.
Shani.
So yeah.
Thank you. Wow.
Thank you both, Liz, Lauren. Thank you.
That was Shani Sandy, and you can find out more about her work in the show notes. And you can learn more about this show by going to technicaldifficultiespodcast.com. Drop us a note at technicaldifficultiesteam@gmail.com or leave us a review on your favorite podcast app. It really helps people discover the show. We're especially curious to know what stories and insights resonated.
This show is produced by Lauren Lin and Liz Gerber and made possible by the Center for Human-Computer Interaction and Design at Northwestern. Thank you so much for listening.